Support for the Exchange Podcast from NHPR comes from you, our listeners,
and from the New Hampshire Department of Agriculture, Markets, and Food. New Hampshire's farms and farmers markets are full of fresh goods, rich with agricultural heritage, and available all year long. You can locate pick-your-own-farms, farmers markets, fairs, and more near you using the directories at visitnh.gov/agriculture.
From New Hampshire Public Radio, I'm Laura Kanoy, and this is The Exchange. Much has been written about the upheaval in the retail industry, the explosion of online shopping, decline of the malls, revival of downtowns, the shop local movement, the disappearance of some retail giants, and the growth of others. And so, from national chains to Main Street mom and pops, retailers have had to adapt to rapidly changing consumer habits. Today in The Exchange, with all the holiday shopping underway right now, we're going to look at how retail has adapted and what it takes to thrive in this extremely competitive environment. Let's hear from you. Our email, exchange@nhpr.org. Again, exchange@nhpr.org. Respond on Facebook or Twitter at NHPR Exchange or give us a call, 1-800-892-6477. We have three guests with us. Alice Pierce is here, Executive Director of New Hampshire Made, which promotes and supports local businesses that make New Hampshire products. Alice, is really nice to see you. Thank you for being here.
Thank you for having us.
Also with us, Robin Malloy, counsel at Hinckley Allen. She specializes in commercial real estate and has extensive experience in retail facilities. Alice was Robin was also formerly a lawyer for Staples. And Robin, it's nice to meet you. Thank you for being here.
Thank you. Nice to be here.
Also with us, Nancy Kyle, President and CEO of the New Hampshire Retail Association. Nancy, welcome back. Thanks for your time.
Thanks, Laura.
Well, and Nancy, I want to start with you. What's your take on the pace of change we've seen in this industry? It just seems breathtaking.
It's unbelievable, isn't it? I mean, keep in mind that the iPhone wasn't introduced until 11 years ago. And now, who doesn't have a smartphone? So 15 years ago, we probably started shopping online. There wasn't much of that before that. And it's just a whole new ball game. Read some of the wonderful, think back 15 years ago, there was Montgomery Ward's, there was Caldor, all these retailers that are not here. And retailers today have to evolve. They have to react to the marketplace and change, because it's such a competitive market.
People in this industry talk a lot, Nancy, about the Amazon effect. What is the Amazon effect on retailers large and small?
It has just changed everything. People can just shop and compare. It's convenience for the consumer, not as easy for a small Main Street retailer to compete with that. They can't get items that inexpensively, they can't ship that inexpensively. So a Main Street retailer has to really have an experience. They have to have a relationship with their customer and build on that, have a niche that's something that will set them apart from Amazon.
You touched on something that I want to ask you about, mentioning people shopping on their phones. So as you said, 15 years ago or so, people really started shopping online. That's how Cyber Monday got started, because 15 years ago, people's right. home connections weren't as good, so they would get to work on Monday after Thanksgiving, do some shopping online, hence Cyber Monday. Now I'm guessing that's kind of, I don't know, is that still even a thing anymore, Cyber Monday? I mean, people shop on their phones, you can do it anytime, people have decent connections. What do you think?
It's still a really huge shopping day just because of the hype behind it, and so many retailers have specific online deals for that day.
In addition to you know, the whole online phenomenon, and I'm sure that will dominate our conversation today, Nancy, who are some of the big retailers that have just gone? They've disappeared from the landscape.
You know, as I said, Montgomery Ward, there was a retailer called Riches.
Riches, right.
Yeah, there's just
Woolworth in downtown Keene, I remember.
Yeah, exactly. So many of them have not been able to evolve, and they have faded, and it's part of the overall evolution of retail. Things change, the marketplace changes. That's where, again, where a small retailer has a better chance at change. They can react quicker, they can react to the marketplace. They don't have to go through all the layers that a major retailer has to go through.
Well, it's really interesting, and we'll talk about why some retailers have been able to stick with it and others have not. Toys R Us, that was a big shocker for people when they closed down. What have you seen, Robin, in terms of some of the big, big shifts that Nancy is describing?
Well, I think Nancy used a great word when she said evolve. I think retailers have had to evolve to enhance the customer experience so they can differentiate themselves from Amazon and a lot of online retailers. And also, they've had to really integrate their online and offline, the brick-and-mortar stores' presence, so to make it seamless. They're able to, in that way, they're able to offer a lot more to the consumer. Staples has been doing this for a long time. If you go into a Staples store, can't find what you want, there are kiosks there where you can have access to the full product inventory on their computer. Walmart is starting that. It's called the Endless Aisle. So that it's smart for the retailer because they don't lose a sale. If you can't find what you want, you're not going to go next door and buy it. You can order it at the store. It can be delivered to the store or to your home. And this is a whole new evolution in shopping.
Yeah, go ahead, Nancy.
And even for a smaller retailer, their marketplace before used to just be their town. And now their marketplace is global. It's the same thing, that they can just market to a much bigger audience that they never had the ability to before.
That's true.
You know, what I'm curious about is we've talked a lot on this program about the decline of some malls, not all, but some, and big retailers like Toys R Us and Sears is really struggling. And yet others like Walmart, Robin, like Target, seem to be doing okay. So what is it that these big retailers who are hanging on are doing that the other big retailers that are not hanging on are not doing?
I think they're being proactive and they're sort of getting a good sense of the market and what is needed to change. Walmart, for example, is going to be using a lot of their parking lot and developing, in some locations, a town center where they can offer sort of a lifestyle development where people can shop. They'll have other retailers there. They're offering community spaces, restaurants. And so all sorts of services to bring people into back to shopping. And I think that's a trend in development generally, where you have sort of these lifestyle centers where people can work, play, often live, use restaurants, and shop.
That's so interesting. So it's the idea that on the one side of this, people are just not going out, doing more at home. But on the other side, if you're offering people an experience, not just go to the store, get what you want, and come home, you can find some success there.
Right, exactly.
Nancy, and then I want to bring you into Alice.
And look at it on the local level with the whole Tuscan Village shopping experience that's going to happen in Salem with, you know, housing, and it's a whole lifestyle. It's the same thing.
So how is that different, Nancy, from a mall? Because, again, some malls have struggled. Steeplegate Mall here in Concord, I was there last weekend, and I don't know, a quarter of the stores were empty, a third of the stores. There was no problem finding parking.
It used to be that the mall was a sense of community.
Right.
And I don't think that some malls have been able to achieve that.
So what's the difference? Is it the indoor-outdoor thing? Is it that you don't have a fountain and, you know, a little place for kids to play? I mean, what is it?
Some malls are very active in their communities and they're hosting events and it's part of being part of the community.
Well, so we've been talking about larger retailers and malls, but Alice, I don't want to forget about the work that you do with NH Made. How do you see some of these big trends that Robin and Nancy are presenting playing out with the little guys who you work with?
Well, the little guys, so to speak, we work with about 700 small, independent, locally owned businesses.
That's
around
a lot.
New Hampshire. There's quite a few entrepreneurs, and they were more than happy to jump in with all these ideas for me to talk about. So, you know, clearly this is on their minds. But it's that sense of community that the independent local businesses bring to some of these larger situations that Nancy and Robin have been talking about. So, for instance, one of our members, she's a librarian by trade, but she does beautiful artwork on the weekends. And one of her points was, you know, kind of the way that a lot of the stores that she works with are combating the Amazon effect are by really stepping up their selections of locally made products, because people want locally made products, and that's what's helping to differentiate some of these brick and mortar and online stores from some of these giant marketplaces.
How do the small retailers that you work with, Alice, feel about the Amazon effect? Are they frustrated? Are they feeling a healthy challenge? Are they feeling like it's so different from what I do that I don't even need to worry about it?
Well, with the 700 businesses, we have the whole spectrum of you know, everybody's looking for different ways to sell their products. And we have everything from people who are very sophisticated to people who say, I'm all about the one-on-one connections. I want to be at the farmer's market. I want to be at the craft fair. I want to talk to my guests. I want to create those personal connections. And even some of our larger establishments, I mean, they're looking at, you know, what's the story? How do we make our product? How can we tell our story so that our values align with our customers and build that brand loyalty? So, for instance, Sap House Meadery does a good job doing that, you know, where you can see how the products are made. They do a lot with social media to kind of share their values, and they're trying to build their brand that way and their loyalty.
And do some of these small businesses that you work with sell their products online as well, or are they more just brick and mortar?
It's across the board. I would say though probably 85 to 90% of our members do have some kind of an online store. They either will host their own website. Some people, like, I know you know Marketplace New England, Laura Miller there. She has a, you know, very beautiful brick and mortar store on Main Street in Concord, but also a very robust online marketplace because she believes, I want to get this beautiful locally made product to my customers where they shop. So, you know, people take that broad spectrum. Apple Hill Farm in Concord has said, you know, we don't concentrate on online, but then they use us as a partner. And actually, if you go to their website, you'll see for online sales, go to nhmade.com.
So you can sort of support them in that because they're small.
Right. So we sell their product for them online. So people are doing either creating their own, using like an Etsy or something like that, or they're looking for partners who can help them with their online sales because they recognize it's an important part of the business.
Sure. Super interesting. Robin, I can see you want to jump in. Go ahead.
No, another point I think that retailers are doing is expanding what they offer in the stores. So you can go to a CVS now and you just don't pick up your pharmacy items, but you can actually do a lot of your shopping. And it's sort of meeting that customer need and providing that service. Many businesses are offering services. Staples is piloting a co-working facilities in a few of their stores. And the whole idea is to attract business, to bring people into the store.
Yeah, they actually have at Staples, I can't remember if it's the Postal Service or UPS.
Correct.
Which was great because I was there to buy a package to mail something to someone. And then I turned around and I said, oh, I can also mail it here. I don't have to go anywhere. So that was kind of handy.
Yes, it is. And I, you know, noticed my local hardware store is now doing repairs. So not only do I buy product there, but I can bring things back. And that's tremendously convenient. But also, once I'm in the store, I'm more likely to see something and buy that as well.
Really interesting.
Provides a service and it generates customers for them.
Right. And more big stores putting in, you know, there's a Starbucks coffee now at Target. You know, that's new. I mean, so that's a draw in and of itself for some people.
Right.
And then while they're there, gee, why not pick up a few things? Go ahead, Nancy.
I think another thing that's really important, Alice, you talked about businesses wanting to be part of their community, but also consumers want to shop at a business that has a social conscience. And so the reason that Target is so successful, they have their credit card that whatever percentage it is, you pick the school it goes back to. And so I think that's also true on the Main Street level. Consumers want to shop with retailers that are doing good in their communities, in their state, and that type of thing.
I want to remind our listeners that we'd love to hear from you this morning. Again, our number here in the exchange is 1-800-892-6477. Send us an email, exchange@nhpr.org. In the midst of the holiday shopping season, we are taking a look at the tremendous changes we've seen in the retail sector around the country and here in the state. What trends have you noticed as a customer? And if you work in retail, of course, we'd love to hear from you. Also, how have your own shopping habits changed just in the last 10 or 15 years, especially this time of year? Again, our number, 1-800-892-6477. Send us an email, exchange@nhpr.org. You can always respond on Facebook or Twitter at NHPR Exchange. And all of you, Bob in Portsmouth wrote, he says, we are a 40-year-old second-generation family business located in Market Square in Portsmouth called G. Willikers. We have adapted to the new retail terrain by ramping up our in-store events. We actually have a local book author, illustrator, coming this Saturday to sign his latest children's book, Santa Bruce. That's Ryan Higgins is the gentleman's name. Bob says, tonight is Portsmouth Shopping Nights, where 21 downtown businesses gather together to offer sales and discounts and light refreshments. We've had events over the year so far that include how to solve the Rubik's Cube, storytelling through Lego bricks, and lots of local art on our walls. Our store has never been more vibrant and we outlast Toys R Us. Wow, Bob. What a great email. What do you think, Alice?
Well, I think to the point that, you know, Nancy was saying, you know, people want to support businesses that support their community. And I think the beauty of something of what Bob is doing is he's bringing in a local author. He's giving a soul to his business. When people shop locally, three times more money stays in the local community, and it helps build the uniqueness of that community. So, you know, Market Square in Portsmouth is a perfect example. Main Street in Concord is a great example of local businesses creating a unique character for their community that keep people coming back.
Do you want to jump in, Nancy?
Yeah, and the other part about that, what Bob is doing in Portsmouth isn't just for his store. People are going to go to his store, and they're going to hear that, and then they're going to shop at the stores down the street, and then they're going to go to dinner at the restaurants nearby. I just went to the Gibson's event on Sunday with Louise Penny and was walking around downtown. Gibson's was packed. Main Street stores were packed. The co-op was packed. People were streaming into O's restaurant. So when a retailer does an event, it impacts the whole community.
Yeah. And just listeners who don't live in Concord, those are all Concord businesses.
Yes.
You mentioned Gibson's being the bookstore. And I'm just still so struck by, Nancy, hearing you say, you know, all these shops and restaurants downtown were packed. Again, I had to go to Steeplegate Mall because there was something that I needed there. No one was there.
Yeah. Yep.
I just wonder what's going on with that.
It's the sense of community.
100%. Yep. Yeah. And a lot of businesses are banding together, as you said, mm-hmm. you know, creating community-wide events. There's a group, I was just in North Conway 2 days ago visiting a couple of our members, and they've banded a number of businesses there. 24 of them have banded together to form an association called the White Mountain Independents, and they proudly fly a flag outside their store that says, I'm a member of White Mountain Independents. And they work together to build the economic vitality of the North Conway area and to, you know, make sure that that community stays unique and special by having independent businesses.
Because North Conway is an area that also has a lot of chains and outlets and so forth. So that's different.
Mm. Yep, and it's by working together.
Well, thank you for that email, Bob. And Scott on Facebook says, Toys R Us closing made it hard this year. And I'm sure there are a lot of parents, especially of younger kids, who are going, oh, okay. What's been the impact of that, Robin, or anyone jumping in, of Toys R Us closing? That was a big, big player for a long time.
Yeah, I would agree. It has been. But I think other stores are stepping in to fill up the void. So I think you have the Targets, Walmarts are offering a lot in both more product, both in-store and online, because they know that there's a void to be filled.
Yeah. What do you think, Nancy?
I think the smaller retailers are stepping up also. I mentioned Gibson's Books. They have a toy store in there. So I think that smaller retailers just are also helping it with that need.
I see. So again, it's this whole thing of having to think outside the box, so to
yes.
speak. I'm not just a bookstore. I also sell this. I know some of the chain bookstores also sell a lot of toys. At what point does it start to look scattered, though, Nancy? Like there's just a little bit of everything. It starts to look junky.
Boy, I think you have to go quite a ways to get to that point. As long as there's some kind of cohesive element. If you're a bookstore and you have a cafe in there and a toy store also, it sort of all brings everything all together.
All right. Well, coming up, we'll take a lot more of your emails, calls, Facebook comments. Again, our phone number is 1-800-892-6477. Email is exchange at nhpr.org. You can always respond on Facebook like Scott did. It's NHPR Exchange. More on the changing face of retail, especially during the holiday shopping season, in just a moment. This is The Exchange on NHPR.
Hi, it's Rachel Martin for Morning Edition. We're at a point in the year when we set our sights to the future. while reflecting on yet another year gone by.
To rescue 12 boys and their soccer coach from a flooded cave has succeeded.
SpaceX successfully launched what is now the most powerful
photo of the students who all moved here within the last year from countries in Africa, the Middle East, and
support the reporting that keeps you connected all year long with your year-end tax-deductible donation today. Go to nhpr.org, and thanks.
This is The Exchange. I'm Laura Kanoy. Today, in the midst of the holiday shopping season, we're looking at how retailers, large and small, are adapting to rapid change in their industry. And let's hear from you. How have your own shopping habits changed in the past 10 or 15 years, especially during this time of year? What trends have you noticed in your own local retail environment as a customer? And if you work in retail, of course, we'd love to hear from you, too. Send us an email, exchange@nhpr.org. Once again, exchange@nhpr.org. Respond on Facebook or Twitter at NHPR Exchange, or give us a call, 1-800-892-6477. We have three guests with us. Alice Pierce is here, Executive Director of NH Made, which promotes and supports local businesses making New Hampshire products. Also, Nancy Kyle, President and CEO of the New Hampshire Retail Association. And Robin Malloy, Counsel at Hinckley Allen. She specializes in commercial real estate. She was formerly a lawyer for Staples. One more time, that number, 1-800-892-6477. And all of you, right back to our listeners. Ed's calling from Guilford. Hi, Ed. You're on the air. Welcome.
Good morning.
Morning.
My comment would be that a trend that I've seen, which to me is encouraging and to many friends and family, is that smaller retailers are paying more attention to customer service, where the big box dealers, I've literally walked into a store and had three agents talking to each other and walked right by them and no one turned to say, can I help you? What are you looking for? Is there anything we can help you with? And that will happen in a smaller retailer. And that, to me, makes a big difference.
That is such a great point, Ed. And without naming names, because I don't want to, I have noticed big differences depending on where you are. What do you think about that, Alice?
Well, it was interesting because I was just flipping through my notes here, and I actually had one of our members, Bella's House Bakery, was talking about how people do expect and should be responded to immediately. They should feel welcome in their store. And Lois was relating an incident where, they shipped brownies in bulk to a customer, and then the customer wasn't sure how to reship them, and so they actually took photos of the process of how to best pack the brownies and emailed the photos to the customer. And so, you know, her bottom line was, we're going to do everything we can to differentiate ourselves by making our customers feel special and meeting their needs and doing it quickly and graciously. So I think, you know, that underscores the point that Ed just made.
Well, and as a busy person, Ed, I definitely can relate to what you're saying. And again, I don't want to name names, but there's a couple stores locally, and these are actually chain stores, where there's two that I can think of at the top of my head where I walk in and immediately there's a customer service person who says, how can I help you? And I say, oh, thank goodness, because I have no idea what I'm doing. But there's other stores where I'm kind of wandering and like, help me out. I don't know about technical items. I don't know about outdoor gear. So help me out here. So you do see a big difference. Go ahead, Nancy.
And the other thing, Ed, I think there's a good chance that if you walk into a small retailer, you could be waited on by the owner of the business, whose grandfather opened the business, whose son or daughter works at the business now, too, and they all have a stake in it. It's their heart and soul. It's not just a store to them.
Yeah. Go ahead, Robin.
No, I agree. It's true. I have had, fortunately, the opposite experience, which I attribute to the need to provide better customer service, but recently have gone to a very large chain and have found my experience has been the customer service has been extremely helpful, whereas before, nobody seemed to be available, nobody was there to help, and it seems like there is being more training and real conscious effort for retailers to provide that customer service,
well,
to differentiate themselves even at the big store level.
I went to a mid-sized chain. It's sort of not a small local business, but it's not a huge chain either, last night to do some Christmas shopping for a person who is difficult to shop for. And I walked in, and this young man immediately said, how can I help you? And, you know, I said, this is what I need. He must have spent 20 minutes explaining the ins and outs of all these products. I walked out 20 minutes later, extremely happy. So it counts. And yet, we do hear, Nancy, that, with automation, retailers are cutting back on their staffs. I mean, for example, at Target, right? You can just, or Walmart or any one of those big stores, you can just use the automatic scan thing. You don't need the cashier. So does that mean a loss of jobs, or does that mean putting people so they can help people trolling the aisles trying to figure things out.
Well, I don't think it's a loss of jobs. I think it's all about customer choice. They want the speed to get in and out of there quickly. And the problem with New Hampshire right now is with a 2.6% unemployment rate that the retailer cannot get help. So it's very hard to staff. Most retailers are not, or most businesses in general, are not staffed at the level that they would like to be.
So that's why you may end up, like Ed says, wandering around looking for someone to help you. All right. Ed, thank you so much for that call. Let's take another one. This is Steve in Bedford. Hi, Steve. You're on the air. Welcome.
Yeah. Hi, Laurie. You're, as usual, I'll say it again, your show is a real treasure in New Hampshire.
Thank you.
I work at Target. I've worked there for 3 years in Bedford here. And I've been listening with some interest. Target's been mentioned several times. And I just heard somebody say that in the big box stores, they can't seem to find people to give them help. And we're well aware of that at Target. We do have enough people. We don't have quite as many as we'd like, but we have enough people on the sales floor so that people are talked to, said, can I help you? Can I help you find something? Can, you know, is there anything I can do for you? Immediately. And we always do that. And if there's no one around, there are quick service buttons that can be pushed and somebody's there within a minute.
Right. So very aware of the fact that, you know, some people like me are sort of wandering around going, where do I find this?
Oh,
and you're saying, yeah,
absolutely.
Go ahead.
Absolutely. I've been in retail for a long time. Before I was at Target, I owned a Radio Shack store. And customer service is everything. Customer service is what not only closes the immediate sale, but gets people to come back because they say, wow, I couldn't have done that by myself.
Yeah, and exactly. I had a great experience last night, in and out in 20 minutes, and it was wonderful.
Right.
But Steve, since you called, I have to ask you, Radio Shack, okay, that's another sort of, there was a Radio Shack everywhere. I think Concord had two or three of them. They've all gone out of business. What happened?
No, that's a long story, but to make it as short as possible, missed the turn to computers. They didn't do the right thing when it came to computers. They tried to emphasize cellular phones. They didn't do that quite right either. And they ignored some of the things that had made Radio Shack so successful, which was personal customer service, the ability to find things that Radio Shack couldn't find anywhere else. Because now working at Target, we don't carry some of those clever little cable adapters and things like that that Radio Shack routinely carries. And you're right, they're all gone. Mine was an independent dealership. My wife and I owned the store. So we were able to provide even a wider range of product because we didn't buy just from Radio Shack. But anyway, getting back to Target, we train the people that work for us to know what they're selling.
Okay.
So that, for example, I work in electronics, and I know about TVs, I know about cameras, I have done for many years. And so people can get their questions answered.
Right.
That makes them feel comfortable with the thing that they would like to buy.
Absolutely. I had that similar experience last night. I remember going into a department store, again, I don't want to say the name, but 2 or 3 years ago, we all needed new suitcases. Our suitcases were just completely bashed up. Well, I have no idea how to choose the right kind of suitcase. And there was a man there at this big department store who knew everything you ever wanted to know about suitcases. So I appreciated that. It's real interesting, Robin, to hear Steve talk about Radio Shack, because some people, you know, were sad to see that store go out of business. They did have those little connectors or cables or just kind of the thing that you needed. But Steve seems to be saying, you know, yes, that's true, but they were just some broader decisions that didn't quite hit it right. It's tough. You have to sort of be strategic, but sometimes you don't guess right.
Exactly. I think, you know, retailers, I think, go into it, especially the bigger box stores where they have to scale on a national level. They don't have the opportunity to particularly purchase a niche for each community. And sometimes you just don't get it right. You think some type of product's going to sell and do well, and it doesn't. But expanding on what Steve said, I think you're going to see in the future that salespeople are empowered with more technology. They'll have more handheld devices. They can do checkouts on the floor, and that will help expedite matters, make it more convenient for customers. I think you'll find dressing rooms are going to have some kind of smart technology in them, so you can access a salesperson to bring you a different size. And they'll also have smart technology to sort of suggest things that might go with whatever you're buying.
So sort of as you have less clerks at the front end of the store, you might have more employees at all around this store, helping you out with those
right.
specific aspects of customer service. When you said a salesperson to bring you the next size, I mean, I remember when I was much younger, every store that sold women's clothing would have someone who helped you. You'd try on the 10 and you'd say, no, I need another size. And there was always someone to bring it to you.
Right. And I think there are
that's
still
sort of old-fashioned.
It is old-fashioned. And I think sometimes I will ask a salesperson and they look at me like, you're kidding me. But I think that there are still some retailers that do emphasize that type of customer service.
Well, lots of interesting comments from our listeners. Thank you so much for that one, Steve. Again, our number 1-800-892-6477. Up next is Jill in Concord. Hi, Jill. You're on The Exchange. Welcome.
Hi, Laura. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
I just found in my own personal experience, struggle with the fact that we all have too many things, and the holidays and shopping leads to more things coming into the house. So I've personally been trying to look for more unique gifts like experiences or consumable items, things that people can eat and enjoy and be done with. Actually, I'm a small business owner here in Concord and a New Hampshire Maine member, and I own a business called Granite State Granola. Been trying to promote things like gift bags with granola and granola bars for people to give as gifts to teachers, coaches, friends, again, to try to reduce the number of things we have and give people something that they can eat and enjoy and not contribute to all the clutter that we own.
Well, Jill, thank you so much for the call. And what do you think, Alice?
Well, I think many of our members chimed in with just the importance of experiential. That how can you differentiate yourself? So, you know, Jill makes wonderful granola, and I think what she's doing in terms of, you know, creating packages and targeting that granola is a wonderful idea. But many of our members, when I asked for some input, chimed in with the importance of experience. So like Moonlight Meadery, for instance, will do a tasting in their room, bring the guest into their facility, do the tasting, and then, you know, hope that they bring some of that product home. Seven Birches Winery in Lincoln does the same thing. The Franklin Studio in Franklin, they actually were talking about how when you walk into it, it's a beautiful old building, and people come in there, in addition to shopping, they'll have a cup of coffee, and they're trying to create that sense of community. So again, going back to that experiential idea for gift giving and just for people to have year-round.
Jill, thank you so much for the call. Here's an email from Molly in Keene who says, I am the manager of the Hannah Grimes Marketplace on Main Street in Keene. We have been providing a marketplace for local makers and growers to showcase their product for 21 years. Now more than ever, Molly says, our customers are most concerned with where they are spending their money, how the products they are purchasing are being made, and whether or not the organization is socially responsible. Molly says, despite living in the age of Amazon, we continue to have loyal and new customers due to providing exceptional customer service and having the ability to create an in-store shopping experience that you just can't achieve online. Molly says, thank you kindly for this important discussion. This relates to some of the stuff you've been saying all hour, Nancy.
Right, and I'm really familiar with the Hannah Grimes Marketplace, and they do wonderful work, and it is a whole experience when you go in there. It's an amazing place to shop.
Thank you so much for the email, Molly. You know, all of you, we talked a lot earlier about the so-called Amazon effect, but it's interesting, just lately, and I'll turn to you first, Robin, I've been reading about Amazon opening up brick-and-mortar stores, so there seems to be some synergy going on there. I think I went into one of those when I was in New York earlier this year. Kind of Spartan looking, not real cozy, but there it was.
Yes, I think there's generally a recognition that brick and mortar is the key to long-term growth.
Interesting.
And statistics show that opening a physical store increases traffic to that retailer by 37% to their online presence. And for a new emerging business, which is something that's been around for, say, less than 10 years, it's as much as 45%.
So say that again, because that's really interesting. And
so opening a physical store increases traffic to the retailer's website by 37%. And for new emerging businesses, which are, you know, the newer businesses that have been around for less than 10 years, it can be as much as 45%.
So you need to do both.
You need to do both. I think that's key. And Amazon's planning on opening 3,000 Amazon Go stores, by 3,000 of them by 2021.
Wow, that's a lot of stores.
It is a lot of stores. Warby Parker, which you may know, it's the eyeglass company that started as an online presence. They have will have 100 stores by the year end. A lot of companies that didn't have an online, didn't have an in-store presence are suddenly opening brick-and-mortar stores. And it's really, it's advertising. It's a permanent billboard. You see that store. And conversely, closing a store has a very, you know, adverse impact on a store's online business because you as the consumer go by, the store isn't there anymore, you wonder how they're doing, you know, their businesses generally, how the health of the company is. So the brick-and-mortar store really has a significant impact on a company's business.
Which is really interesting to hear because, again, online shopping has only grown year after year after year. So it's interesting to me, Nancy, to hear Robin describe how that physical presence is still really important.
Well, I think the other thing to keep in mind is that even though online sales continue to increase, it's still only 10% of all the sales done. So you really do need that brick and mortar.
10% of all retail or 10% of all holiday retail?
Retail sales.
Just 10%?
Yes.
Okay, I did not realize that. Mm-hmm. I thought it was a lot bigger. Yeah,
right. 90,
go ahead, Robin.
90 cents on every dollar spent in retail so far is in brick-and-mortar stores.
And funny, yesterday I listened to WZID when I drive to work in the morning, and they had their almost impossible trivia question was, what's the number one date thing for millennials to do? It's shopping. And millennials are more apt to shop in a mall or in a store than online.
That's really interesting.
Really amazing.
And I would not have guessed that. And I'd love your thoughts, too, Alice, on how the millennial generation, you know, now coming into adulthood and having jobs and shopping and so forth, how they have affected some of these trends that we've been talking about.
Well, I think it's all about that connectedness. You know, they've grown up in a world where, you know, their phone is their connection in a lot of ways. And I know that, you know, we really talk about the personal connection. You know, we talk about with locally made products, like the story behind the locally made product, the producer. And to hear you talk about the importance of these brick and mortar stores, Robin, I'm thinking it's because people want to go in, they want to interact, they want to see a human being, they want to hear the story behind the product. If it's food, they want to understand how is the product made, how is it sourced. And you know, when we've done research in terms of where do we want to target our messaging in terms of getting people to buy local, it's boomers who have the, you know, want to eat healthy foods because they're getting aging, but it's the really, really robust are the millennials because they care about their communities, they want to support their communities, they care about where their food comes from, and they want that touch, they want that personal connection, and they want that warmth.
Picking up on what Robin told us, I have noticed in some of the smaller, you know, stores on Main Street that over time have come and gone. Some of them say, well, it was too expensive to maintain that physical presence on Main Street, but we're going online, so our customers will still be there. Sounds like from what Robin told us, maybe that's not such a good idea. Like, you need to physically show up.
It certainly sounds that way. I'm just as surprised as you to hear that only 10% of sales are online. That's amazing. That's amazing because I know we see our members struggling with, okay, I've got my product. I'm going to sell it wholesale. I need to have an online component. How do I do that? And how do I do that well? And how do I integrate social media? And how do I get this wonderful product that I produce? How do I let people know about it?
Well, let's talk about social media after a short break because some large and small companies are using social media very effectively, beyond just go to our website, click if you want to buy. So we'll talk about that after a short break, and we'll keep hearing from you. Thank you so much for all the comments. You can send us an email, exchange@nhpr.org. Again, exchange@nhpr.org, or give us a call, 1-800-892-6477. This is The Exchange. I'm Laura Kanoy. Exchange listeners, we'd like your help picking our top shows of the year. Now, The Exchange team has chosen 10 shows that we really liked, but you can help us pick the top 5, and then we'll air those during the holiday week. Take our survey. You can find it at nhpr.org/exchange. Again, nhpr.org/exchange. We've already heard from more than 400 listeners. We'd love to hear from you. This hour in the Exchange, trends in retail this holiday shopping season, and tell us what you've noticed among retailers large and small here in New Hampshire from a customer perspective, or if you work in retail. We'd love to hear from you, too. Send us an email, exchange@nhpr.org, exchange@nhpr.org, or give us a call, 1-800-892-6477. And Rob Malloy, Nancy Kyle, Alice Pierce, let's go right back to our listeners. Trish sent us an email. She says, I had an excellent experience at Target. Staff member researched the item I requested Target did not have. She researched further and told me of two other stores in the area that might have the item. I feel like I was part of the miracle on 34th Street. Thank you so much. I really appreciate that, too. You know, if the store says, look, we don't have it, but you can go down the street at such and such, I say thank you very much. That gives you a good feeling. Thank you, Trish, for that. Julia says, we have stopped buying gifts online and in big box stores because my family and friends just don't need more stuff. Instead, shopping locally allows us to find unique and locally made consumable products such as handmade chocolate, tea, and coffee. We've also found great gifting experiences such as massages, escape rooms, theater tickets. However, we do love diversions, puzzle, and games because they have a room dedicated to trying games before you buy them. What a good idea, trying a game before you buy it. Because what if you try it and you don't like it, and then everybody's stuck with this board game that everyone hates? Thank you so much, Julia, for that call, for that email. I want to go back to something that I think you mentioned just before the break, Alice, and that is the use of social media. So we've talked a lot about online shopping. Go to the website, see what we have, click it, buy it. But what about social media? Facebook, Instagram, Snapchat? How are retailers using social media to reach customers?
Well, from a lot of our members, it's that extension of building relationships with customers. So, for instance, Scudax is a coffee shop in Warner. And his whole thought was, you know, we don't sell things through social media. We share stories. We build connections with our guests and with our customers. So it's about creating that relationship. I had a jeweler, Dreamscape Jewelry Design, and she said, you know, it takes time to do it, but it's an extension of building relationships with my customers. It's getting to know them, and it's building brand loyalty.
Well, kind of an equalizer, too, right? I mean, a small company that you work with can go on Instagram just as easily as a big company.
And Instagram, as we all know, is especially useful for products, for beautiful products, because people are going to Instagram for visuals.
Yeah, it's all about the pictures.
Yeah.
Did you jump in on that, too, Nancy?
No, I totally agree with Alice. I think that a lot of retailers are really taking advantage of the social media and just getting their stories out to people. There's an immediacy that they can't get in any other way to tell their story.
All right, let's go back to our listeners. And Vicki is calling in from Massachusetts. Hi, Vicki. You're on the air. Welcome. Go ahead.
Thank you very much. Yes, I would love to hear more about how workers are treated, to talk about them, whether they happen to be in unions or not. But it drives prices up. The cost drives prices up. But also customer service changes in marked ways simply because workers are unhappy. There's a wide range from a wide variety of different shopping experiences, and I would love to hear more talk about that if you could.
Yeah, there is a wide variety. You're absolutely right. And we should talk about workforce issues. The number one complaint we hear from a lot of business groups, Nancy, is we can't find good workers. What's the status of that workforce shortage in retail here in New Hampshire?
It's a very huge problem because, as I said before, unemployment at 2.6%. You know, people set up, retailers set up interviews. People don't show. They hire somebody. They don't show. They've gone to work somewhere else.
Just because they got a better deal.
They got a better deal. Yeah, yeah. So it's very hard for a retailer. They'll put time and effort into training somebody. They stay a month, go somewhere else. And then there's also the other side of that, that a lot of retailers have people that have worked for them 20 years, 30 years, and they build real good relationships with their employees.
How has the trend by some larger retailers to, you know, pretty significantly increase wages, how do the smaller guys compete with that?
Everybody has to, in this marketplace, everybody has to increase their wages. Because if they don't, they're not going to get the help. They'll go somewhere else.
Yeah, and if you get bad service, you're just not going back.
Correct.
I'd love to hear from you, too, on that, Alice. The idea of looking for good workers, having to pay them, you know, decently in a competitive market and the impact on that all-important customer service.
Right. I mean, it's definitely a challenge. And, you know, our smaller members have either tried to solve it by creating a very positive work environment, by building a very, you know, family-feeling orientation. The pay is definitely a challenge for smaller employers because they do have to meet, you know, what the market demands. And it's definitely a challenge. But, you know, it's again, that it's trying to build, I think, that camaraderie that this is more than just a job. This is actually, you know, a community.
So if you're a small retailer, a New Hampshire-made retailer, maybe you can't pay as much, but you offer, I don't know, more of a like you said, a family-friendly experience or a team experience.
Right. There are a number of ways around it, and they're, you know, obviously got a broad array of responses to how they're dealing with it. So, I mean, it's a little bit of all those pieces, but it's really about identifying, you know, what kind of service do we need, and then how do we best find it. A lot of our producers will work with, you know, organizations that encourage you to, you know, hire disabled people. You know, so a lot of our, particularly if they're in production, if they're making, you know, pretzels or candy or food, that's been something very successful for many of our members.
Yeah, and I know there's been a trend talked about hiring people, more people with disabilities who certainly can work, you know, work a lot of different jobs. And also the governor had an initiative to encourage businesses to hire people who are in recovery from addiction. So that's another sort of untapped workforce resource. Go ahead, Nancy.
A lot of people are, there's a big refugee community, especially in Concord, and a lot of people are viewing that as an untapped workforce. Seniors are going back to work more than ever. And I think the thing about retail as an industry is that no other industry can offer as many options to an employee. You can work part-time, you can set your own hours, there's flexibility in your schedule. And you don't have that in any other industry. No other industry employs as many young people. You know, most of us got our start in retail. I started out working at a Sears. That was my first job in high school, so.
Yeah. Well, I had a gentleman the other day at a grocery store bagging my groceries. He was 80. Mm. 80 years old. So yeah. That was that sort of relates to what you said, coming back and working part-time. Again, the number for you to join us here in the Exchange is 1-800-892-6477. Vicki, thank you for that call. Again, 1-800-892-6477. You can always send us an email, exchange@nhpr.org. Couple other trends that I'd like to ask you all about before we close out. And we talked earlier about why some malls are dying, some malls are thriving. We did a whole show, Robin, on what's happening with malls, how they're having to repurpose themselves. The mall here in Concord, which has struggled, as we've said, now has a theater. I think it now has like a play place. It has a charter school. So how are you seeing this trend continuing of some malls are really struggling with their retail spaces, so they're shifting it?
Yes, I think, you know, there was a tremendous growth years ago. People put in malls that maybe really, with a lot of thought, should not have been there.
So they overbuilt.
They overbuilt, yes. I think that's a big problem. And I think, you know, the sort of the style, the indoor mall. A lot of people want to be able to walk between stores, have an outdoor experience. I mean, like everything goes through cycles. And to some extent, a lot of malls just have to be revamped, have to get a better tenant mix in. It may be unfortunate you have two anchors in a store and those two anchors didn't do well. So they're out. It creates a big hole in the store. A lot of businesses thrive based on who else is in the mall. So a lot of thought has to go into redesigning the malls. And as we said, being more creative in what you're offering. Now, rather than just being a place to shop, you want it to be a destination. People can plan on shopping, meeting up with friends afterwards to go out for dinner or go bowling or do something else. You know, years ago, there were certain uses that you did not want, as a retailer, you didn't want in your mall. You didn't want a movie theater. You didn't want restaurants and bars.
Really?
You didn't want a gym because they were parking hogs. They used the parking. The parking space was filled for 3 hours, and it impacted or potentially could impact your customers coming in. Now, I think retailers are realizing those are the things that bringing people out. And as long as they're strategically placed in the mall and care is taken so that their parking isn't affected, retailers want to be in malls where those things are taking place. So it's a whole different mindset as to how the consumer wants to go out for a day or for an evening.
That is really interesting to hear you say that, because there's a pretty successful theater at the Steeplegate Mall in Concord. And the last time I went, I thought, you know, it's too bad there's not a restaurant here, because I kind of like to go out to dinner now. But there really wasn't any, there's really no place to go. So.
Right, right.
That's a whole different mindset, isn't it?
It is. It truly is. People really have to consider the entire mix of what they're bringing into the store, what retailers, and really provide enough variety so that there's something for everybody.
You know what else I haven't quite understood, and I'll ask you, Robin, but anybody else, jump in, please. Again, we've seen, you know, the death of some of these traditional department stores. Sears is struggling. Bon-Ton has been struggling. You know, other sort of mainline retailers that we thought would be here forever have gone out of business. And yet, other big box retailers, like Best Buy, Home Depot, Target, they're all doing fine. So what's the difference between that and, you know, a Sears?
Well, I think to some extent they're more willing to evolve. Maybe they're more flexible in how they approach business, how much of an online presence they have, how quickly they were able to ramp up to online. You know, I know during this past Black Friday season, I can think of, I read about one major clothing retailer that did horribly just really because their online presence crashed. Their system couldn't handle all the business coming in, and it was a terrible loss for them. Others were winners because they were able to provide other services. You know, a lot of retailers are in two-day delivery. Old Navy, I just read about this, which is really interesting, is offering free Lyft rides to anybody who buys something online and wants to pick it up at their store.
Which is kind of handy, picking it up at the store.
Right. And that's definitely a trend that's very, very common. And it's great for the retailer, too, because as opposed to an Amazon, which has to ship from wherever and has high shipping costs, if I order online and go to my local store to pick it up, it's sort of acting as a warehouse.
Right.
They've got the product in stock. They can do it much less expensively than an Amazon can.
Go ahead, Nancy.
And that's also a peace of mind for a customer, because the news is filled with stories of the porch thieves stealing
right.
the packages.
Sure, sure. And is it coming? And is it there? And absolutely.
Yeah.
And, you know, if it's not the right product, you can say right there to the person, by the way, this isn't the thing I ordered. Since Robin mentioned Black Friday, Nancy, how important is Black Friday still? It seems to be maybe turning into Gray Friday, because now they have sales like 2 weeks before and a week before and pre-Black Friday. I mean, what do you think?
In New Hampshire, it is still the busiest selling day of the year.
Really?
It is still Black Friday. Even though they're backing up a little bit to Thanksgiving or they're starting earlier, it's still the biggest day.
And then local retailers have, what is it, Small Business Saturday, Plaid Saturday?
Plaid Friday.
Plaid Friday, okay.
Plaid Friday, where everybody's supposed to wear plaid and show your community support. And then Small Business Saturday, which is an effort that was started by American Express, right? And then in the Monadnock region, and we push this, they have something on Monday called Cider Monday.
Cider.
So they will, you know, everyone put out apple cider or snacks. And it's all about that community. It's about encouraging members of the community to come into the community and support other local businesses. So yes, small businesses have definitely gotten creative, like locally owned businesses have definitely got creative about, you know, how can we create a niche for ourselves?
Yeah,
so
take your Black
season.
Friday, fine, you can have it, but come on downtown for Small Business Saturday. Go ahead, Robin.
I think on a national level, too, retailers are offering online throughout the weekend the same prices that you can get in the store. So if you can't get there, you can still buy it online for the same discounted price without having to wait to Cyber Monday. I think the concern is just try to get that customer whenever you can, as quickly as you can, before they go somewhere else.
A couple more quick trends that I'd love your thoughts on, and maybe to you, Alice. In Concord anyway, that's the retail market I know best since I live here, there's a very healthy consignment shop sector. We seem to have a lot of secondhand stores. How does the rest of the retail sector feel about these? How do they fit in with this whole local business trend that we're talking about? Do you want to jump on that, Nancy?
Yeah, I think that the retailers appreciate it because it's part of our just recycling everything. We're in that mindset and gently used items for purchase. One of my members is a tack shop in Tilton, the Trainer's Loft, who sells used horse equipment, blankets, and I mean, talk about a niche market. There's nobody else doing that. And there's room for everything. It's about consumer choice.
Well, especially with little kids' clothes because they grow so fast. Who wants to spend, you know, $60 on a coat for a two-year-old when that two-year-old is going to grow in a month or so? What about pop-up stores, Alice? That's another trend I've noticed in local retailing. These stores that are just not there except from, you know, mid-November to the end of December.
It's a great opportunity for locally owned businesses and producers because a lot of them can't afford to have a storefront. And they, again, it's all about customer service. It's getting your product in front of people when they are ready to buy. And there's a sense of community at those pop-up stores because all these entrepreneurs are all staffing their area and they're getting to know each other and they're sharing best practices. And it's just it's that very happy and supportive environment.
Well,
and consumers enjoy it too.
Well, and they're fun to see because you kind of go, oh, I haven't seen that before. But from a commercial real estate perspective, Robin, I just wonder what happens to that space like the rest of the year? How does that even manage?
Well, by and large, those spaces are used, say, by a Halloween store, used by stores in stores that are already empty. So this is an opportunity for the landlord or the existing tenant to sublease the space and get rent for that time period. It's an opportunity to bring more customers in. So it really is a win-win situation for everybody.
Instead of just sitting there empty.
Right. And instead of the Halloween store having to figure out what it's going to sell the rest of the year.
Okay.
It really works for everyone.
Well, all of you, this has been really interesting. And Nancy, I really appreciate you being here. Thanks a lot.
Thank you.
That's Nancy Kyle, President and CEO of the New Hampshire Retail Association. Alice Pierce, good to see you. Thank you.
Thank you.
Alice Pierce, Executive Director of New Hampshire Made, and Robin Malloy, good to see you too. Thank you.
Thank you.
Robin Malloy, Counsel at Hinckley Allen. And a reminder to our listeners, we still need your help in picking our top shows of the year for rebroadcast over the holiday week. We've chosen 10 finalists. Help us pick the top five. You can find the survey at nhpr.org/exchange.
The views expressed in this program are those of the individuals and not those of NHPR, its Board of Trustees, or its underwriters. Hey, if you like what you heard, spread the word. Please give us a review on iTunes to help other listeners find us. And thanks.